did you leave in? Have you any idea your position? Would you have been...
I don't know how I'd have managed if my husband hadn't. That's why I say I think it was a godsend that he was struck down with malaria when he did, and he was able to come up to Mamio and organise our evacuation. I got a lot more things through, and he gave me lots of pointers. Pat has told you already that I had a loaded revolver, didn't she?
No, I don't know the story of this.
Well, I don't know if I ought to tell you it.
Oh, yes, I think you ought. That, you know, it sounds very interesting.
Well, on the morning of our evacuation, he came upstairs and he said, took me into the bedroom. He says, look, Bess, I've got something for you. And for goodness sake, you don't let it out of your sight. I said, what is it? And it was a small revolver, 6 or 16, I think, bullets, wrapped in a huge piece of flannel. So I said, I won't want that. Oh, yes. He said, I want you to promise me that if you do fall into Japan, you'll shoot yourselves. He says, they raped the nurses in Singapore and also Hong Kong. He says, and they'll not spare you either if they get hold of you. So he says, then they kill them afterwards. So he says, you might as well do it first time. So he says, in about an hour, I want to take you somewhere, I swear. He says, just over the road where the jungle started. He says, now I'll give you some practice. So I didn't say a word. And when he came, we'd seen Sergeant Andrews take the dogs off. Alan had arranged everything. I could never have done that. Sergeant Andrews called. And when Ian and Keith saw him taking the dogs on the lead, they said, Sergeant Andrews, can we come with you, please? No, he says, I don't think. Ian says, look, Alan said, look, Ian, I've got something for you to do. Distracted him and Keith, and where Ian went, Keith went. And so we went over into the jungle, and he put this target onto a tree, got it firmly fixed. Then he measured so many paces and he dug his heel into the dirt. He says, now stand here, Bess, and see if you can hit that target. So I never said a word, and I waited, and I remembered my dad's warning. He taught me to shoot when I was 13, and I've never touched a rifle since then. Now I remember him saying, you look at the bull and you fire above it, because the bullet, once you've fired it, it drops so many feet and that. So he says, you'll miss the target altogether. And but when he went for the target, he turned around and said, where the hell did you learn to shoot? I says, well, my dad taught me when I was 13. He says, you never told me. I said, you never asked me. Oh, he says, I feel happy now. I do. And then he reloaded it with the other clip, wrapped it up. I says, now then, you put it in your pack when we get back. And I had a pack on my back, and that pack came into bed with me. I slept with it. I never left my thing, and I put it even in the shower. I put it where I could see it all the time, because he said, for goodness sake, don't lose it. Don't let anyone, because things were stolen out of bedrolls and things like that.
Well, so what did you have to carry? You were saying about a bedroll and your pack.
Well, the bedrolls were carried by elephants as far as the Tamil River, and then they were carried by coolies. We didn't carry the bedrolls at all. All we had was a pack on our back, haversack on our back, and a stick to help us.
Your husband, when he told you to shoot yourself.
Yes.
How about your little boy?
He said, Ian first, Keith, Lottie, and then yourself. He told me the order to do it, and I would have done, because I didn't fancy being raped by the Japanese. Terrible.
Were you frightened at this time?
I was a bit nervous and fluttery, but it has to be done. It has to be done, and what has to be will be. It's fate. I look upon that, what has to be will be. And something happened for a purpose. But...
And what was it like going over the... I mean, I've heard of the Arva Bridge.
Oh, yes.
What is that beautiful. Irrawaddy like? The scenery of it?
Well, I think we were too upset to notice, really. I do know it was a very huge... It must have been over a mile wide. And a beautiful piece of engineering. And the British had built it, too. But there you are.
Yes.
It was blown up.
Would that have been soon after?
Oh, when the British Army was retreating from Burma. Yes, they did a lot of scorched earth policy.
And then you say you went on a steamer up the Chindwin.
Yes.
What was that like, going up the Chindwin?
Now, it was very, very comfy. And it was the... I've got some notes somewhere, I don't know.
No, it's what you remember, really, yes. Margaret, we're interested in. And you're doing so well. You have such a good memory.
Well there's the mileage of right through to Calcutta from Mayo. Alan and Ian worked it out. This is years later in Wakefield with the maps. They got their things. You can take that if you want.
Yes, so Maimeo to Mandalay was 30 miles.
Maimeo, yes.
Yeah. Then you went from Mandalay to Mangwa, which was...
Moniwa.
I beg your pardon.
No.
60 miles. Moniwa to Kalawa.
Kalewa.
Kalewa, yeah. 110 miles. Kalewa to Situng,
yes.
80 miles. And then... On from Situng to Tamu.
Tamu, yes.
50 miles.
That was the border.
And then Tamu to Imphal, 70 miles. Imphal to Dinapur, the railhead. And then you went from... I think that really takes us... Dinapur to Calcutta.
Yes.
450 feet high, is that? What would that be? Anyway, this gives us very much, very well, the distances to Imphal and Dinapur. And thank you very much for allowing me, because I know you can't see to read, can you,
no,
Margaret?
Not very well.
No, so that we can perhaps copy as well, which
you
would
can.
Be
yes,
very
you can.
Useful. Yes.
At the railhead.
Yes, we're going now to the railhead, aren't we? When you arrive, you've gone up the Chindwin.
No, we're going up the Chindwin.
Yes.
And a lot of... Oh, damn those notes. A lot of people, at one point, they got off, Anglo-Indians and people, to go by another route, which I believe it wasn't so good either. But we got off at... got off at Sitang. And we were told we would be met by a Major Weems. And I said to Lot, oh good, he sounds like a Scot. But when we met him, he was a Burmese. But his accent was pure Oxford. He'd been educated in England. But he was a really nice fellow. And he couldn't do enough for us. He said, if you ladies need anything, just come along and see me. But we only stayed overnight in that camp.
What sort of camp would that have been?
Well, we were taken to a row of bamboo huts. And Ian and I were given one with two beds in, which we put our bedrolls on. And next morning... We had to be, we were given the alarm at 5:30, and we were asked to please roll our beds up and put them outside. The elephants they were using were only half trained, so to save any trouble, don't let any children come out. It would startle the elephants, could cause a stampede. So we had to go back and shut our doors until the bell sounded. Once the bell sounded, we could go up to the toilets. They were all bamboo there, and then come back, dress. And, we were dressed, just wash, and then go for breakfast. And as soon as breakfast was over, we all lined up and set off walking. And we had a guide to take us. And in the rear, there were the two Sikh policemen. And Ian often walked with them because he could speak Hindi. And they really were nice chaps.
How many of you would there have been?
I think we were a party of about 60. Very few men, just retired civilians and people like that. But they were mostly women and children.
As you had, you know, as you were leaving, particularly as you were going up from the south to the north, did you have any idea of how the army were acting? Were they destroying things?
Well, they were, as they were fighting the rear guard action. Yes. But we didn't know about that until later on. But we used to listen in one camp where they had a wireless there. And it said that Rangoon is burning. The looting and devastation is terrible. And we're really depressed about that. But, and then we're moving up country.
Yes, I'd like you, if you can, because I've rather interrupted your story, and I'm sorry.
No,
here
no.
You were setting off on foot.
Yes.
With the elephants in front of you, would
no,
they have been?
They'd gone ahead, way ahead. We saw them in the distance, probably a few miles in the distance, when the paddy fields were clear. But mostly we were going through wooded areas and climbing up all the time, and it was terrible.
Was
but
it?
We managed.
Yes, could you tell me about, you know, could you describe an early day, do you think, setting off and what would have happened, what you had to experience?
Several days, we were in the next camp by about 11 to half past.
In the evening?
No, morning, lunchtime. We set off just after 6. As soon as breakfast was over, we got up, formed up, and we were off with the guide. And some of the children had to be carried by coolies, you know, in sedan chairs. And a lot of it was across the plains. And then we started climbing. And some of the hills were very steep. And it used to puff us getting up there. But one day we were going up this hill, and Lot clutched my arm. The kiddies were walking with some of the other children. And she said, "Oh, Bet, I don't think I can go any further." She said, "I feel all in. I'm absolutely bushed." I said, "Well, we do seem to have been, because I hadn't a watch on me, we do seem to have been going a lot further than yesterday."